How's it going, all you amazing people? And welcome to the Amazing Action Comics Indie Creator Comic Spotlight. And today, we're very pleased to have two guests with us. I am your host, John Pepe. Unfortunately, Angel cannot be with us today due to a family emergency. So, Angel, I hope everything's okay over on your end. Keeping our fingers crossed for you guys over there. But today, I am very pleased to have with us two creators, a filmmaker and a comic creator. I have with us Justin Ciardullo and John Ambrose. And Justin did the comic book, The Ballad of Gia and Frankie, which again came about because John discovered some very intriguing footage that exists in the wrestling world and created a documentary based on that. Am I correct with that, gentlemen?
That's right.
All right. So this comic, The Ballad of Gia and Frankie, as well as the documentary, kind of covers two things that I love. I do love wrestling. And now, granted, my wrestling fandom really is concentrated to about the 70s, 80s, early 90s. I have kept up since then, so I am familiar with the world of professional wrestling. But this kind of goes a little bit deeper because this kind of is more of the super amateur wrestling world. The backyard wrestling, I think, seems like to be part and play in this as these characters or these people move into the wrestling world. We're going to get into a little bit about that. The other thing I love about this is that this is a true story, and I love comic books that can take a true story and put them into the comic book format because I think it's a great way to digest and absorb a lot of things, very different from a documentary or even a fictional or a filmed version of a historical real life event. So I'm really kind of intrigued about what's going on here. I've only kind of barely scratched the surface of the story. So I'm looking forward to getting a little deep dive into exactly who these people are and what was going on. So we are going to actually start with John, because John, you are a filmmaker, correct?
That's right.
And you found some footage that was very intriguing and very interesting to you. And that's sort of how this whole ball started to get rolling, correct?
Yeah, that's right, John. I mean, it's a really wild and random story. So I think back in July 2019, my production company, Jambone Pictures, which I'm the founder of, we found some footage on a laptop. So we were at a garage sale. We needed some extra equipment. So, okay, this laptop will do, like a MacBook from like, I don't know, 2010, but whatever, this will do, or 2014. So as we were starting to go through this, like, what are these videos on here? And as we dug a little bit deeper, we were like, okay, there's something here. There's something that's exciting, a bit disturbing, and we need to do something with this footage. We need to, first of all, get in touch with the wrestlers. We need to get in touch with, you know, everyone involved in this and tell this story. So just a little bit of background on the characters themselves. So you mentioned, the backyard wrestling. So, yeah, I mean, I think, the origin of the wrestlers might begin in backyard wrestling, but then evolve to pro wrestling. And so it's really interesting to see the evolution of one of these main characters, Gia Savitz, to becoming a pro wrestler. So as really, I'd say the hero, and in some ways the anti-hero in this story, really everything that Gia went through, it came down to bullying, really, and just, being destroyed again and again, and then rising up. And then out of nowhere comes this Frankie Firestarter, you know, after Gia's made it, Gia's pro wrestler, and Frankie, out of nowhere, you know, don't really know who this character was, where he came from, but he wanted to once again destroy Gia. So it's a wild story. And, you know, we needed, as I said, we needed to create a documentary of this. So, you know, we contacted Justin, contacted the other people involved. And here we are today. What is it? 4 years later with a documentary and then a comic book, because the comic book company, they said, oh, this story is insane. Like, they saw the documentary, it's insane. We need to create a comic book about this, and not just one. We need to create a series of this. So this, the amount of content that came from this amazing story, a story that I'd say really needed to be told, about everything that wrestlers go through to make it. it's like what they put their bodies through, what they put their mind through, and then when they deal with, you know, unsavory villains like Frankie Firestarter. I mean, it's, you know, as I said, these people can be destroyed. So yeah, that is the origin of the story. It's wild, but as I said, it needed to be told.
Now, for those who don't really know about the backyard wrestling scene where this kind of all began, give us a little context on that, as far as for those who might not be familiar with this phenomenon, because it kind of is a phenomenon and it goes on all across the country, that these sort of backyard wrestling leagues have cropped up. And then to be able to have somebody, you know, people go from that scene into actual professional wrestling. So from your experience, John, just tell us a little bit what backyard wrestling is. You there?
Having issues with my network. I'm going to switch it up. But okay. Yeah, Justin, why don't you get started, give some background on the backyard wrestling while I reconnect.
Yeah. You know, backyard wrestling is, you know, it's interesting. You know, I got into it just around like 11 years old, or maybe you could say even like 6 years old, maybe playing, fighting with my cousins in their basement. Remember Easter time, 88, my cousins, Anthony and Frankie, we didn't always get along and I was always the odd man out. So I felt like I was, battling it out with the Hart Foundation, and I must have been, you know, I felt like that, or it was a fun time. And then it just never stopped. I was obsessed with wrestling. And so backyard wrestling to me could kind of be a broad topic. I feel like it's us that love professional wrestling and, you know, we want to emulate our heroes and we go out there, and maybe it keeps us grounded maybe to a certain extent. So it's kind of like we're emulating our heroes. And it seems fun and all. Do I recommend it? No, I don't. As I'm mature and I'm 41 years old, I recommend that if you have a goal to become a professional wrestler, that's great. My goal, and I did a little bit about this. I mean, my recommendation, I did a little bit about this in high school. I did wrestle briefly in a high school club. I recommend amateur wrestling to any young adults. Before they reach professional wrestling, backyard wrestling also kind of sets you back a little bit because you get a little too, it kind of rises your, ascends your ego thinking you are, and it could also affect your wrestling training. It affected mine because what happened was, is that you think you know everything, go in there and you think you know more than the trainer. I recommend, despite you loving wrestling, I recommend you start out in high school. You know, you're a high school freshman, go out, try out for the wrestling team. I know it's a little, maybe not as entertaining, but I was watching the Angle documentary with Kurt Angle, which I recommend on Peacock, which is very well done. And he made, when you look at the Olympic trials he was in, he fought, you know, with a broken neck. It was so inspiring, that documentary, that I take more pride and respect for amateur wrestling, freestyle Greco-Roman. So I'm going to say this one more time. If anyone, young adults, we have a lot of wrestling fans or young adults out there, I recommend stay away from backyard wrestling and try out for the wrestling team in high school. Whether you're out of shape or not, high school wrestling will teach you discipline on how to get in shape before you go to the pros. Don't do what I did. Don't do what anyone else did going to backyard wrestling.
You know, that's actually great advice because, you know, there's a lot of now with the internet age and obviously in YouTube, you know, there's a lot of these backyard wrestling, you know, footage out there. People are posting and putting up, and it's insane. It is wrestling without rules in a lot of ways. Yeah. These guys are not necessarily trained. They're just throwing themselves off of, you know, objects onto objects just for that, you know, belt made out of the pie plate or whatever, you know, and it is fun. It is definitely fun, but yeah, it is not the best way to start for wrestling. I was a high school wrestler all 4 years. My brother was my coach. You know, And I remember a lot of kids, you know, when I was growing up, they would take wrestling because they thought it would be like WWF, right? And then it's like, oh, there's rules and we had to learn these moves. And but boy, that's the fundamentals, man, because it begins there. And like you said, with that Kurt Angle documentary, I mean, you know, there was a point where in order to be a successful professional wrestler, you needed to have that background in Greco-Roman, you know, and guys like Bob Backlund and, you know, guys, you know, that knew how to wrestle traditionally before you took it to the big stage with the big lights and the shows and the stunts and things like that. You really have to work towards that. So now, Justin, you have a background in wrestling beyond just wrestling in high school. You said you did some of these backyard wrestling things. So kind of let's talk about your wrestling story and then how you linked up with John and then how Jambone Pictures kind of began and then how this comic came to be.
Now, do you want me to go into my backyard shows or more into pros?
Let's start a little bit in the backyard because you have that experience and then that transition into the pros.
Okay, so if I could go prior to the pros, we'll start with 2001 where the documentary starts.
Okay.
I hooked up with a backyard promotion called Extremely Crazy Wrestling in New Rochelle. Down like on the border of down. I don't know if you're aware of New Rochelle, New York. Are you a New Yorker too? Okay, you are. Okay.
New Jersey, but spent a lot of time in New York. My dad was a sports writer. He covered the Yankees. So it's like, yeah, I grew up basically in New York. Yeah.
So, you know, I worked with a bunch of guys out there. We had a bunch of interesting characters, AKA always kicking ass, sick. We used to do stunts, Detox, which is a character I created, and this guy decides to take it behind my back. So we called him Detox. It's basically a rip on Sandman a little bit,
okay,
a little more extreme. We had a guy named Christian, also that's his real name. And we used to do crazy things. I used to, you know, leave there with a bruise on my leg, my thigh. We went through chairs, tables, and New Rochelle, you know, is a very high energy adrenaline rush town, you know. And, you know, so I would go there, travel there about half hour, between half hour, 40 minutes, work with these guys. And then I invited them into my home, a few of them, AKA and Darkseid came in there. And we did a show in my basement. And when you see the Balanchine and Frankie documentary, you can see an excerpt of that match. So, and then from there, I did YWF in Yonkers, New York. Did a little bit of that. And then finally, I trained with Flesh Eater Cavatro a month after I finished up with YWF. And then from there, went on to the pros beginning June 20th, 2004, to be exact, which is also excerpts of that match could be seen in the documentary as well.
Hmm. And how was it going pro? How'd you like that world?
Well, you know, it's very, very unique world. You know, it was different because I grew up with, you know, 80s, 90s wrestling. And I take pride, and John's like this too. And I'm sure it sounds like you're like this too because you're an 80s guy, 80s wrestling guy, correct? Who was you mentioning? Yeah. So we take great pride in character development, which is which is manifested in the movie. I felt like when I entered the industry, I felt like that was diminishing. We saw just basically a lot of, and Ring of Honor, I feel like, shaped this. Mm. I'm not trying to bash Ring of Honor. I'm just saying, just being honest. I feel like it reshaped mostly the just wrestlers coming out there with tights, just doing the matches. And sometimes I feel like pro wrestling turned into glorified UFC. We even have indie promotions. I don't want to say specifically who this was, but it's calling their promotion their wrestlers fighters. Mm-hmm. Trying to make it look like as if we call them this, we make it look like it's real. So I kept going on and off with the wrestling business because I wasn't felt like there was a lack of glamour. I liked the Flair, the Hogan, Stone Cold Rock. Today, I would say the guy reminiscent of that is LA Knight. LA Knight's getting over. Why? Because he represents what a wrestler should be, knowing how to walk the aisle, going in there. And sure, we see hard-hitting brawling here at times, but the guy is what a wrestler should be, talking smack on the mic, you know, Al Snow even said, I want to go on and on about this. Al Snow even said that what makes a good worker, he said, Hulk Hogan's a great worker, he said, because he said the guy gets the crowd going. People would come to arenas to see him. That was regarded as a great worker. So I kept going on and off with the wrestling business because I wanted glamour. I wanted to feel there was a mystique. I also blame backyard wrestling for ruining pro wrestling when I got in there. And now we see more and more backyard promotions coming in, running indie shows in their backyards. I'm seeing a lot of that. Don't get me wrong. I fed into that too, even in the pros. And I'll get into that. We did have a promotion called NEWA, which started out as a backyard called BYWA. However, there was an exception to the rule with this one. And NEWA content you could see in the documentary as well. NEWA, which was owned by George Nadiello and Michael Mazzetta, when Michael Mazzetta was the booker, one of the lead booker, they made NEWA look like WWE to a certain extent. If you see the footage, especially with a promo in the documentary, you could see that we had maybe a little under 100 people in that crowd. But these fans were rabid because we tried to make this indie promotion look like WWE. Mm-hmm. So here's where the backyard circuit is kind of cool when they go into the indies. This is where I'm going to take pride in this. Because they emulate the stars in WWE and the big time things, whatever, even on the indie circuit, then they're able to maybe turn their indie promotion into like WWE. And that's what NEWA did, and NEWA did it real well. What caused the downfall of NEWA was there was a lack of investigation and intensive, and I don't mean to bash George Nadiello, who owned it. That's what I'm saying to George. If he's listening, start the promotion, please, because you can't get over it. Don't mean to sound like a jerk. But George didn't investigate the athletic commission enough that we had Nick Burke and Z-Bar, two well-renowned guys on the indie circuit, go into our locker room and act like as if they were our buddies and then reported us to the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission. Now, do I blame Nick Burke or Z-Bar for doing that? It was underhanded, but when you have to understand that when you have guys that take pride in the wrestling industry, they don't tolerate this type of nonsense, and they're going to say that we're backyard because we didn't take pride in the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission. So, you know, I was taught in life fairly recently to take both sides of the story, so I have neutral positions on Nick Burke and Z-Bar, God rest Z-Bar's soul, and George Nadiello and Michael Mazzetta from NEWA. There's a mixed bag here. You know, for me to make matters worse, I would say George and Mike needs to restart NEWA because they made it look like WWE. Now, to sum up everything with my wrestling career, because I'm focusing on NEWA because that was my most memorable run, I would say there was good and bad. And I would say that, you know, I think for anyone to really, if anyone really loves professional wrestling a lot, I would say, like, you know, we as a wrestling community, I would say we need to focus on the glamour and we need to focus on the mystique and the drama, because I feel like without that, I feel like at times maybe I'm seeing some things now in the business that looks like a little bit like it's kind of diminishing with work rate in certain respects. And you could have a great match, but if there's no profound character that is making that much of an impression, it kind of hurts it a bit, you know. So that's really how it is. And then I guess Frankie Firestarter, we're going to get into that, made me love wrestling. And I know this is kind of nuts because it's about like Sting and Black Scorpion. So here's this outsider coming in causing me grief, but it made for compelling YouTube TV, public access TV, what we're doing at the time in 2014, because I like that. You know, even if we have – and this is kind of a low blow because I know Sonya Deville dealt with this, but it's kind of like when you have – when wrestling is in the state where there's mostly all tights and guys working and then there's not enough character development going on, a guy stalking me is kind of like a breath of fresh air. No offense. I'm not trying to cause any grief, but it's kind of like a breath of fresh air, especially when there's a lack of glamour. But I'm seeing now with LA Knight, you kind of feel like that's going to go up, and his merchandise is selling hot. And LA, and look, he did a battle royal at SummerSlam, and I'm not really a fan of battle royals anymore. He did it, and I'm like, wow, this is great. He made Sheamus look good. Sheamus looked great. So I think my wrestling career could have been better as a whole if we had more of the glamour spots that I grew up with. But despite that, if you see the documentary, you see the NEWA stuff and even the WTF stuff, even you see this glamour aspects over there. So that overpowers some of the atrocities I had to deal with. And John did a great job showcasing that to the best of his abilities.
So, you know, it's a great point about modern wrestling. It's like we've been allowed to peek behind the curtain so much that it almost feels like kayfabe doesn't exist anymore in its purest form. And what I kind of love about your story here is, again, with the emergence of Gia as a personality and this antagonism by Frankie, feels like there's a lot of good kayfabe in there. So it feels like there's a great sort of story in there that was built and developed. And whether or not there was some sort of coordination between you and your stalker is a question. And it makes the person be like, okay, is this straight up kayfabe? Is this a Kaufman Lawler thing? Or is this legit? Is it real? And I love the giant question mark. And I love that the viewer and the reader kind of has to decide for themselves. So let's talk a little bit about Gia. We'll talk about Frankie, and then we'll talk about how this all sort of came together. So who wants to talk about Gia?
I guess I should go first. Going into this. Okay. Gia Savitz is a very interesting character. And right before I left the wrestling business, we were elaborating more on that. But we're going to start with the origins first. It came about when I made my pro debut, but it started out as the Nomad.
Yes.
And that's why I had purple lipstick on. And I remember Zach Carter, the referee, very established referee on the indie circuit, and great guy, very helpful. Was a little standoffish about the purple lipstick. I wouldn't say, you know, it was a time where I'm not saying anyone was really homophobic. It's just it's kind of hard to deal with, I guess you could say, when everything is more polished and you got this guy that people are just not aware of. But Zach Carter is a very lovable guy, so he wasn't doing anything. No, we got along well. But it's kind of like when you are used to everyone looking like, because we had a roster, and we didn't have too many people show up for this, but we had a roster where it was thin. So you had these guys that looked like, and this was Massachusetts. These guys are very conservative. So I guess when you see someone do that, it kind of stands out. And then finally, in January 2005, I decided to go with Nomad Gia Savitz. Gia Savitz is a very interesting character. I called myself the transgender phenom. And things like that. I mean, to sum it up, I don't know if I really would call it the LGBTQIA hero, really, per se. I would say it's mostly a character that represents humanity. I guess you could say stands up for humanity and maybe shows that we are human. Mm-hmm. So when you see the footage, even my matches, which are on my YouTube channel at Justin Chardulo, you see that there's a lot of humanistic components to it. A lot of feelings in there, but then you kind of say to yourself, are these feelings all legit, or is there maybe a sociopathic factor into this? And it kind of got elaborated more on in the end in 2018 with WTF spots, which got out of control to the point where we were worried about death threats. I was worried about death threats because we got out of control creatively. When I was working with Nelson Torres of WTF at the time, doing these spots and all, you know, you give him an idea. Nelson would, you know, he's very ballsy. He's got a big set of grapefruits. You know, Nelson has the biggest set of, you know, sometimes he makes Vince McMahon's grapefruits look like sour grapes, little sour grapes on some wine orchard.
Nice.
Somewhere out in my native country of Calabria, Italy. You know, but the guy has a big set of balls. So he went along with a lot of this creative stuff to the point where I'm like, you know, Nelson, maybe we should edit what I did, what I said, because now I regret it. And look, you know, something just happened in the news, and I think we may get – he's like, no, Justin, don't worry about it. His voice is like, no. We're not going to get death threats. You have nothing to worry about. Did I get death threats? No, I didn't, because Nelson's audience, they got no safety net. They defy the odds. They got no safety net. Sometimes they can be a little impulsive. So they say, you know, you do what you want. I don't give a shit. You know, that's their mentality. And a lot of times the WTF fans are great to have, or any wrestling fans are great to have, no safety net. because even though we're branded, and I had a track record of being impulsive, even though we're branded for being impulsive and it's dangerous, sometimes it works to the advantage when you have to go and open up the creative envelopes. So we were getting to the core of more elaboration into the character. And a lot of it, I wouldn't say it was totally realistic on my end and my embodiment, but there was also a lot of things I could empathize. I consider myself to be an empath person. That's a controversial term. I consider myself to be that way. So I can kind of feel things maybe deeper than others. No offense to humanity and mankind when I say that. But I feel like that. And as a result, I could kind of feel the pain of the inner turmoil that people were going through at the time. I kind of put it in myself, not try to pick sides, but kind of stay in the middle with this, and kind of added that to Gia. Gia came out with a black fedora hat, black lipstick, got a little dark. You know, so there was that being elaborated on. So Gia Savitz is a complex character. You could say humanity, but is it really humanity, or is it some struggles throughout some profound, you know, mental health episodes that were building up throughout the years? That's something maybe we need to build on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting you say that Gia sort of became a hero for the LGBTQ community, because I always think of the one that really comes to mind from when I was following wrestling and WWF days, Adrian Adonis, right? Adrian Adonis started as a leather jacket, tough guy, right? Bad guy, you know, he was tough and, you know, you didn't know if he was going to pull a switchblade on you, that kind of thing, you know? And then he does that turn, that whole character change, and Adrian Adonis becomes adorable Adrian Adonis and was still a heel, still a bad guy, and was taking sort of those tropes, those, you know, those Gorgeous George tropes, but really amplifying them to almost vilify somebody in that community. And how well that worked or not for his career is debatable, because unfortunately his career was cut too short. But I find in your story and this creation of Gia, this idea of saying, you know, look, this is just who this person is. It is not the defining trait of whether this person is good or bad. This sort of, you know, this moving into that community. So I think that that's very refreshing compared to how that sort of character was portrayed about 20 or so years before. So good on you for that, for doing that. And so basically, John, you find this laptop with this footage and you're like, I got to find this guy, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And you found him. And what happened there with the development of the documentary?
Yeah. So I reached out to Justin. Actually, it took me some months. I was digging around. I'm like, I need to, like, whatever it takes, I need to find him. But basically, yeah, I got in touch, talked about, you know, the vision for the documentary, got a little bit more on the background. Again, a lot of this is really disturbing. I mean, like, I will say that I do think an atrocity was committed. You know, I don't want to give away too much, but as I said, you know, this footage was just wild. So we laid out the vision for it. So I mapped out, you know, what I see as this is how I want the flow to go. This is how we're going to promote it. I think it was about 8 months in development, because I already had a lot of the footage, put it out, you know, to the circuits, to the film festival circuit. And it got accepted by 19 film festivals around the world. So I was ecstatic about that. And as I said, the story lives on. I count my blessings, that day that I, you know, we purchased that laptop and found that footage.
Right. Right. And so what led you to accentuate the documentary with a comic book? How did that come about?
Yeah, good question. I could start that and then Justin, feel free to jump in. As I said, like, the lore of this story, the lore of Gia and Frankie, and is as unlike anything that I've seen in wrestling or you know, even in storytelling, just kind of where this came about and like these you got to see, I mean, you got to see the documentary, see what I mean? And you could, you know, you could check out the trailers as well, but like the lore that's behind this, is it's so intriguing. So once we put out the documentary, as I said, first on the film festivals and got accepted, then on Vimeo on demand, we wanted to stream it and make it available so anyone can see it, not just the festivals. Then Legacy Comics, they saw the documentary and they reached out, I think to Justin first, and they said, "Listen, yeah, we need to turn this into a comic book." Hmm. It's just like they just saw, as I did, this is like the most ideal story for a comic book, not just one, but a series of comic books, because there's just so much here.
That's amazing that the publisher saw the documentary, yeah, and saw you guys say, can we do this as a comic? Yeah. Sometimes it's usually the other way around.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. So how does the comic break down? Who does the work for the comic? Again, Justin, this is your story, so I'm sure you're heavily involved in the comic. The preview I had, I didn't seem to see any credits. So just want to let us know, you know, who's doing what for the comic, and then we'll go a little bit from there.
Yeah, I guess I could show. Yeah, so we have...
there you go.
There we go. So this is the default cover. Available on physical and digital. And we see John here is above here. Now, I wrote the story also in conjunction with John's vision. I had to keep that in mind. So I could say it's my story, but I had to write it within John's vision. So it's really still our story.
Yeah.
And then we had, Patrick Hickey Jr., who was making some edits to, he felt, you know, to fit, you know, because he has to go along according to his business model. And also he has, you know, experience in the comic book world more than us. It's his passion.
Yeah.
So he has to also go according to how he feels he's fit. So he made some edits. Then we have Josh Adams, which was the artist on this one. Josh did an incredible job. And then I want to go with the Gia Savitz default cover.
Nice.
Which is also, we have, you know, of course, it's the default cover was, here we go.
Yeah.
There it is.
This is a homage to Frank Miller. I have to stress this because then Patrick, because of Patrick's comic book passion, you know, if I don't mention that, he's gonna, you know, he drills me for that. So this was drawn by Valentin Quinones. So he drew this, and it's you know, it's an incredible cover. It's homage to Frank Miller's Wolverine, the first Wolverine cover. And so this is physical and digital. And of course, these are, when you order the physical, Legacy Comics, what they do is they give you a bag and a board, and they ship it out real nice. And here are the pages in here. You got some good pages here. You know, you got some real life issues here, like the bullying. And a lot of us in the pro wrestling business have been through bullying before. And it leads us to kind of get us stronger and go through some rigorous wrestling training. And sometimes we don't always deal with the greatest trainers here. And, you know, just, you know, then you parlay yourself, you kind of find the gimmick here. Oh, here you go. And then we see here are Gia Savitz. And this is based on NEWA woman wrestler Vane, women's wrestler Vane, who you can see on YouTube. And there's even a video of her hitting me with a cookie sheet.
Yeah, she's amazing.
I got a knot in my head. So she's a strong woman, and a beautiful, beautiful woman doing real well for herself right now. I'm tired from wrestling, but and then the digital, we have a digital cover, the Frankie cover.
That one is by the way, is terrifying. You know, when I saw that one, like,
that's only available on digital. And everything, but you know, hopefully we'll get that on physical as well for everybody. But if you really like wrestling comic books, we're giving everybody a broad range of stuff, not just for wrestling. We're giving a broad range of things because we feel that's necessary. We feel there's money to be made in professional wrestling, and I advise you to watch Netflix Wrestlers series right now. I'm in the middle of episode 3, and it tells you about, you know, some things about making money in wrestling. You have to think broad. You have to think about the ideas to, and I'm willing to I'm willing to grace this. I'm willing to specify this because I feel it's necessary. Wrestling, you can make money in it, but you got to think outside the box. And we're trying to find a way to gain new fans and trying to reach out to the lapsed fan who gave up watching it, maybe in the 80s and 90s. I can tell you about so many conversations I've had recently in New York, Connecticut, and everything like that recently. And how they're saying, like, oh, I used to love wrestling when Steamboat was around, Savage had that WrestleMania 3 match with Hogan and Andre, or Stone Cold and The Rock, and then I just stopped watching it. I had so many – most of the people I spoke to just casually said that to me, and they just stopped watching. It's – to say that wrestling is hotter than it's ever been, according to Cody Rhodes, is not true. That's not true. However, I think everything could be hotter than it's ever been if you think about – relating things to real life issues, and maybe characters too need to relate to real life issues, and maybe there has to be more putting yourself in there. I feel like promos are lacking. There's a guy named Louie on TikTok who usually starts his broadcast, and I watch him, and I think he's great. I think he may be from New York, and he starts out with saying "mi gente," something like that, or "mi hinted." And he said, "When was the last time we had a great promo that really inspired us? When was the last time?" We haven't seen that in a while. And he was saying that there was one that we had saw not too long ago between Kevin Owens and Drew McIntyre. But he said, ever since then, we haven't seen that great promo that draws us in, that takes our mind off from our surroundings. And even Al Snow even said in Netflix Wrestlers, he said, I think it was episode 2, he said, you know, when was the last time we saw a WrestleMania match that drew us in? Cena and Rock. We've never seen it since then. You know, there's ways to make a lot of money in professional wrestling. And John and I are trying to, with our comic books, we're trying to cater and try to relate world life issues. And John and I have had some interesting experiences growing up. We're not going to get into everything, but we've had a broad range of experiences. And I think that's the best way is to try to succeed in life, is to try to have a broad range of things to experience. If things get a little too narrow-minded, like I'll give you an example. Hanging out with an entourage of 20 people and doing that 24 hours a day, like you hang out with them in the bar, and then you go home and you say, oh, you know, I'm tired of being alone. I got to pick up my phone and I got to call my girlfriend. I got to call my boyfriend or whatever, or friend, whatever. And I don't like being alone. I think if I need people, I'm going to grow more. No, our belief is that you have to be an introvert, extrovert. You have to have a balance for growth. That's how intelligence grows. Look at Karrion Kross. He said, I'm an introvert, extrovert. That's why I speak this way. So I could be around people, but I have to have time to myself. If I can't, I can't grow. Growth relies a lot about having that balance, having that middle, that neutral feeling. You have compassion for the misfits. You'll have more compassion for the people like Tiffany Stratton and NXT, that type of character, which I had a hard time getting along with growing up. But I think now that I go to the gym a lot, I could actually have compassion for someone like that. Just saying. So you have to have that balance. If you hang out with too many people just like you all the time, you're going to look happy, and then when trouble comes walking, you're going to be like, I've seen that a lot of times. So we want to make sure we get to a broad range of topics, especially in today's society, as well as comparing it to the old school wrestling origins and trying to compare it to the modern wrestling fan, just trying to reach out and get those new fans in of all walks of life, as well as lapsed fans out there.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's true, because wrestling, in to a certain degree, outside of wrestling, is pretty hot, I think, to the layperson, because but what it is all these sort of docuseries that are reflecting on the glory days of the past. You know, maybe Dark Side of the Ring is not necessarily the glory days, but it does do these deep dives on certain things that definitely made it to the mainstream news, you know, but also other things that people might not know about. But it is exploring wrestling history. The great Tales for the Territories series, which does a similar thing that Dark Side of the Ring did, but in a more lighthearted roundtable manner, which I thought was a great show. Just seeing these guys sitting around, not just isolated interviews talking about events, but these guys talking to each other about these events and laughing about the crazy stuff that they wound up doing. So yeah, there's a lot of push now, as I'm seeing, as far as the hotness of wrestling, of reflecting on the past and the history, and not enough moving forward. I mean, WWE right now, it's sort of the most press it seems to be getting right now is with whatever Vince is doing, and whether he's part of the company or not part of the company, whether he has a mustache or doesn't have a mustache, you know, like all this kind of stuff. And it's not focused enough, I think, on the personas, the people who are actually doing the heavy lifting, literally, you know, being these wrestlers and living this life. And so that's kind of why I like what you did here, because it starts small in the background wrestling world, and then narratively it builds and it builds. And, you know, credit to John, I guess, is helping you, you know, you're taking your story, and then John as a director is basically, okay, here are the dramatic beats we have to hit and to have a story arc to really have this thing flower out and blossom in the middle until you hit that big climax at that end. But your story is so fascinating and engaging enough that I feel it, you know, John, you can let me know if I'm right here, that you didn't have to shift too many things to make that dramatic beats, right? That they were all kind of baked in already to the story, and you're just helping him shape it, right?
100%. No, yeah. It was all there already, which was amazing. And what's I think really cool about the documentary, it's like 99% composed of these videos that were found, like home, we'll call them home videos. So it's just a really unique format that we were working with. And the drama was already there. I then, you know, wanted to make sure it's structured with a homage to the old days of the amazing promos, crazy promos between Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, you know, back in the day. Like, I wanted to bring that into it. So you'll see that in the documentary. You also see that in the comic book. So it's like the drama is already there. It's just I just needed to kind of shape it, you know, to make sure that it. You know, there was a storyline to it, but other than that, it's amazing.
It's a fascinating story. Yeah. About 10 minutes left here, so I don't want to give him too much time because he's terrifying, but let's talk a little bit about the elephant in the room here. Let's talk a little bit about Frankie Firestarter. Where did Frankie start stalking you, as we'll say? Where did Frankie start showing up in your world, Justin?
Well, you know, January 2014, I was on WVOX in Rochelle being interviewed for an Elite Generation Wrestling show that was supposed to take place, I believe, in March of 2014. And this guy, Frankie, calls up and decides to, you know, harass me on the air. He even cursed and said the F word. It's not effing funny. And we had a 7-second delay, and the sound engineer, it was a female sound engineer, a very nice person, and she was used to WVOX's conservative programming. So Frankie turned everything upside down to the point where that was Bob Lebensold's, who hosted the show, his last broadcast. So, you know, Bob went out with a bang, and Frankie, I think, caused a fire, definitely started a fire within there, and wasn't the same. So there was a lot of grief over there. You see in the documentary, it got a little heated. I tried to keep my composure together. I looked like one of those high school women in those 80s, 90s, or early 2000s horror movies who are kind of clueless and say, so who wants to be my Valentine? I kind of had that image. I was kind of clueless. But as you can see, as things progress, you see that in the documentary, you know, Frankie's a dangerous man. And our lead editor, who's also, well, intern, you could say, but like to call him a lead editor, Jason Bartels, did a video for the comic book, just focusing on the Frankie imagery and added personification to it. So Jason Bartels did an incredible job. I mean, Frankie added more imagery to Frankie that was so compelling and so creepy. So Frankie definitely is a dangerous man. You know, but yeah, there was some scary times with this, but I kind of had fun and laughed, and even a friend of mine said, are you sure this guy's not going to kill you? I even had, you know, a friend of mine who is from Southern Westchester, New York, and grew up with, you know, he's an old school Italian friend, my friend Chris, and he has the personality of a good fella, Robert De Niro, mobster type, Joe Pesci. And he was like, you want me to lay this, you know, you're going to be okay. You know, this guy is, and you know, sometimes Chris's heart is bigger than his brain at times, like Randy Quaid's character in Christmas Vacation, you know, that one. But, you know, but Chris also is smart too. But he, you know, but when it comes to his friends, he has to look out for old Justin. So there's some scary times with, yeah, some scary times in a situation that I think my friends are more scared for my life than me. And I think the reason why I was not so frightened so much is because I think it was like a manic episode, because wrestling to me was kind of boring with the lack of drama and glamour. And with this Frankie guy coming in, it kind of made me not really focus on the dangers of what could be happening here. Hmm. So it's kind of like a lot of us who have passion for wrestling, we maybe don't think about – we don't have a safety net. It's kind of like in ECW or the hardcore wrestling, we see guys go through barbed wire and they don't think about the consequences, because the passion of wrestling out overpowers the dangerous consequences in the end. I even asked for a barbed wire match, by the way. We almost got one in Colorado. And so the passion of wrestling overpowers the consequences. And in this case, the passion of wrestling made me not even think about what could happen to my life.
Yeah. Well, if I could jump in, I mean, you had good reason to be frightened there, though. Just like I was looking at this footage, I didn't know where that, you know, if both of you were still alive after seeing this footage. And then that's why I was reaching out frantically and was concerned. But I mean, there's, you know, this Frankie's talking about burning you alive. I don't want to give too much away. There's a point that something gets blown up, either the shotgun. I mean, this guy had weaponry. It's crazy. You have to see the documentary. But I get it, Justin. You were like, it was like, you know, an opportunity of just like bringing back that drama, that storyline. It was really compelling. So I could see it being exciting. But yeah, I would have went on a witness protection program if that was me. So you're really courageous. I mean, again, I'll say you were courageous in many ways with everything that you went through in your life, and then making it as a wrestler. And then I guess, so when it came to Frankie Firestar, I was like, oh, I've been through this before. I could handle him. But man, this guy is wild.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting because it's sort of like getting in your head for a second there, based on what you just said, Justin, as far as, you know, and what you corroborated, like, it must have been thrilling and exciting to have that drama built in. But in most cases, these wrestling rivalries, it is two guys, hey, let's build a rivalry. This was not that. This was some guy who hid his identity, who was dogging you at every step for matches. And so on one hand, yes, you're like, ah, this is great. This is the wrestling rivalry that I want. And this is going to create the drama and the excitement. But on the other hand, this guy is not connected to you. So it comes across as a little unhinged that, yes, it seems like it's very terrifying. But then that just fuels the excitement. That just fuels the energy. And how many times did you guys actually square off?
We never squared off. Here's the funny thing. I challenged him to a fight in a parking lot at the EGW show in Tamaco, Pennsylvania, at the Salvation Army. And the show ended up getting canceled. And I questioned the integrity of that cancellation. Did it have to do with Frankie appearing? And Frankie said he was going to show up, so I'll be there. And I didn't show up because the show got canceled. So one day he said to me, you know, where the hell were you? I was waiting for you. And the promoter was Draven Blaze, an accomplished indie wrestler who's on hiatus at the moment, I believe. His father was the promoter. And I don't know if they maybe canceled the show because of Frankie interfering. And it was supposed to be a pretty heavy-duty show. It was not really high-profile indie guys, but it was some great workers like Draven Blaze and Justin Henry and Ariane Clemente, who you will see in the documentary as well. But it was I'm just wondering if that was why the cancellation happened. Is it possible that Frankie's sadism, you know, his behavior caused this cancellation of this show? And I was looking forward to it. I was hyping it. I went on along with WVOX, I went on Quinspin and another show based out of Jersey. Moravian College, Pennsylvania, my apologies. It was a lot of buildup and disappointment. I think the son of a bitch, Frankie, caused my anguish here. And I guess that, you know, made my – that probably my Italian blood, I think, was boiling a bit as a result of that. So Frank, you really swear a lot. Thanks a lot, Frank.
Cause you never actually had that, face to face, right? And you had, but you had seen Frankie wrestle other people, or do we not even know if this guy was truly a wrestler or not?
Well, you know, I don't know what he wrestles. I mean, I don't know the way he maybe, you know, we don't know Frankie. Frankie could be a lot of things. I never really elaborate on Frankie. I don't know if Frankie, you know, he could be one of those guys that maybe he's really just like, there's a Seinfeld episode where Elaine ends up befriending a 15-year-old video store worker
yes.
who has the Vince pics. We don't know if maybe, I don't even think that Frankie could be one like that Vince guy who's trying to romance Elaine. I mean, and, you know, who has acne all over his face and got no balls to do much of anything, but, you know, to call me out, because at the time I looked like an innocent, clueless Catholic schoolgirl at the time. And you can see the footage. That's what Gia Savitz looked like at times.
Yeah.
You know? So, it was just really, really, you know, bizarre. And we haven't really heard much since then, but maybe we are going to get more, and we are getting some feelers about that. Really, there's a lot of stuff going on. John and I are talking about with the future of this series. We're going to call it a series here because we got a lot more footage to release. And John, maybe we should elaborate more on that since we got a little bit of time left.
Yeah, no, for sure. So I want to make sure also that we mentioned the link where you could find the comic book, where you could find the documentary, all the trailers and all that. So that's so our Linktree. So if you go to Linktree/GiaFrankie, that's where you can find everything there. So again, with the Linktree, it's link, linktr.ee. It says Linktree, but yeah. And then /GiaFrankie, GiaFrankie. That's where you find everything, all of the different, you know, variant covers, the documentary, trailers, all the cool stuff is there. We have more coming up. As I said, like, there's more comic books, there's it'll be a new version of the documentary. We also have a WWE version of the documentary, because we're speaking to investors, we're speaking to WWE, because we wanted to have a homage to the old days, you know, Ultimate Warrior, Andre the Giant, Macho Man, and so we integrate some of those, the old matches and promos, in another version of the documentary to help give that, bring back the old days. There's that. And then, yeah, there's new merchandise coming out. There's perhaps a TV series that could be, developed as well. They said we're speaking to, investors and to distributors, so there's a whole lot there. It's just the story I feel like could keep going. I mean, I could see this on Netflix or HBO eventually. There's just so much there.
That's awesome. That's amazing, boy. Guys, this is such a great, fascinating story. I'm considering it the greatest wrestling rivalry that never quite was.
Hell yeah.
But could still be. I don't know, Frankie, if you're out there listening and watching. I mean, he didn't quite come out and say it, but I think Justin's calling you out. And I think that it might be time to start fueling something again. But that's really up on you guys. The book is beautiful. The art is, you got a great artist. The way you're laying the story out is really fascinating. Really getting inside your head, Justin, and what you were going through, cultivating the Gia personality, and then what came after that. Keep at it. Keep going. Documentary, from what I've seen, looks really great, and I like to look forward to seeing more come down the pike. I believe Angel's gonna have, in, you know, on the YouTube page and the comment box, you know, links or in the description box, we'll have some of these links here as well. But again, man, the comic is the Ballad of Gia and Frankie. The documentary is also the Ballad of Gia and Frankie. It's Legacy Comics is putting the book out. Justin Giardullo, John Ambrose, thank you guys for spending time with me today to talk about this. Like I said, this is incredibly fascinating. I did not have enough time to do a deep or dive before we did this interview, but boy, I am like, I am hooked. I am all in, even before talking with you guys, but even more so now talking with you guys. And I encourage everybody to check this story out because this is wild. It is amazing. And if you love just everything that wrestling embodies, as far as great characters, great rivalry, just some off the wall insanity, and guys who are willing to do anything just to hear the roar of the crowd. Boy, this story has it all. And I love what you guys put out here. So thank you guys so much for being here. Thank you for telling the story. I wish you the best of luck. Keep at it. Keep going. Maybe we'll have you back on again at some point when more stuff does come back down the pike. And if there's some more news, hey, Frankie, you come on to this podcast. Let's see if we can get something going as far as you know, getting a little deeper into this mystery, because this is so fascinating. This is great. So, guys, thank you so much for being here, folks. We are gonna call it a podcast here. This was a really great interview with two great creators who again have a love of what they're doing. They, you know, obviously John, you love filmmaking, Justin, you love wrestling, and you both love comics. And I love that these worlds have come together. So thank you guys.
Oh yeah. Thanks so much for having us, John.
No, my pleasure. My pleasure. Like, let's see if we can get you guys on again. Folks, if you are a comic creator and you would like to be on the Amazing Action Comics podcast, please hit us up. We got our socials right here. Stay up to date on all the Amazing Action Comics stuff that is going on in the world out there. And next week, Angel and I will be back with reviewing a couple more indie comic number ones that come out next week. So once again, folks, thank you so much for watching the Amazing Action Comics podcast. Please seek out The Ballad of Gia and Frankie by Legacy Comics, as well as the documentary The Ballad of Gia and Frankie by Jambone Pictures. You will not be disappointed. This is some amazing stuff. And that's it for today, folks. So remember, be amazing, stay amazing, and read something amazing.